You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I am one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8 points, 9 seconds. And on the other line, my co-host doing our last weekly show of 2018, Adam Friedman. Adam, what's up?
Well, you kind of lied on the 5 days a week. We're taking off Christmas, aren't we? Or Christmas Day.
We do Christmas. 5 days a week on normal non-holiday weeks.
Yeah, and next is the last time, because next week we're not going to do a weekly show. So yeah, you're right. It's the last one of the year.
Last weekly show of the year. And it's a boring one because we do these to preview opponents, and it's two opponents that are not super fun to talk about.
Yeah, and really next week's opponents are not any good, right? I mean,
next week's opponents, they played all of already too, so not luck.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure they basically, looking at their next, I don't know, 10 games, the only new team they start to play is Dallas.
Yep.
Then they get the
which means half of the world will tune in and tweet 60,000 Doncic plays.
Yeah, we'll see how he does. But that's like a 4 weeks away or 3 weeks away. So we know about that then. We should talk about this past week, though. It was pretty pretty bad start and then a pretty good end, I guess.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? I guess the Cavs game, they sucked the whole game. But against the Raptors even, I would say they played pretty good for about 40 minutes. So yeah, really, they put together 2.9 really good games.
Yeah, they played 5 bad quarters all week.
Yes, exactly. And just it happened to be the worst quarter. Was that the worst quarter of the season, you think, that fourth quarter of the Toronto game?
You have to remind me of other bad quarters.
I guess it's just the most tangibly bad. Like maybe
there's some really bad first quarters, like 33.
They're harder 14, to remember.
Because they always win those games. They always win those. I mean, I'm trying to think where they've been blown out. They've not really been blown out this year, right? They lost the worst losses.
They had a crappy quarter against the Lakers, didn't they?
Yeah, that sounds right. That's like the Tyreek Evans quarter where he had like 7.
Yeah, the first quarter of the Lakers game, they were down 38-15 at the end.
That's what I'm thinking of, bad quarters. I mean, they had a pretty bad second quarter against Milwaukee to start the year. Portland, they just were kind of never in it. Houston had a good quarter on them, I thought.
Yeah.
And they played them at home the second time.
Top 5 worst quarters of the season. And the fact that it was a fourth quarter made it probably the worst.
They had a 44-23 quarter against Houston.
Could they really?
Yeah. Houston killed them.
Houston finally looking good, making those losses look less embarrassing.
But yes, I would say the Toronto quarter was most disappointing because
11 points. That's terrible.
Yeah, you had all your – I mean, I guess if you look at it in the larger scheme, it makes sense, right? Back-to-back, last quarter, back-to-back. Of course, you're going to be tired. Tired legs going to lead less points, clearly. But in the moment, it felt like this team was probably on the verge of just like
– huge really win. Just,
yeah, huge win and like a statement win by winning by 10 or 15 points.
Yeah. And I get, I want to phrase this appropriately. I get it. Maybe I don't agree with it necessarily, but I get why Nate went so like ISO or just pick and roll heavy because those plays the least frequently result in turnovers. And the Pacers defense had been really good the whole game. So his whole strategy was just let's get 5-on-5 defense and try to score on these long possessions where we want to just run action. But they were horrible possessions, and they couldn't score anything. And then finally the Raptors were scoring in 5-on-5, and that was it.
Yeah, and the biggest problem I had, honestly, was Oladipo didn't defer at the right moments, at least in the last, like, 2 or 3 minutes of the game. Like, you could see they were basically just like, we're going to throw every player at you and pass the ball. And I know, I get it, he, like, has the responsibility to be the leader and the game-winning guy, but if I remember right on that play where he got the jump ball or got a strip – on one of those plays, he had Turner just standing wide open in the corner. Like,
yeah,
Turner's shooting of late, like, let him take that shot. Give him the ball, let him shoot. Like, it's, you know, I'd rather lose on a well-taken shot than just get beat because Oladipo won't give up the ball. And I understand that, like, where he comes from and where he's kind of like, I've always been the guy at the end of games. And I don't think it's an issue not deferring because he defers other times in the game. It's just that I think he gets in end of game, got in the moment too much and then think, oh, they're throwing everything at me. I have to find somebody else to kind of win the game for us.
Yeah, I agree. And you could even see how much, maybe not so much, but like he was more effective. I wanted to talk about this, but you did. That was a better way of phrasing it than I would have. Is like in the Washington game and in the Brooklyn game, you could tell he was deferring. He only took 17 shots combined, 27 shots combined in those games, which for him isn't a ton. I mean, he averages like 18 or 19 a game. And he played pretty well when he played within the flow of the team instead of, you know, doing what he did at the end of that Raptors game where he was just kind of like, all right, I'm going to dribble around and then brute force something or, you know, something like that. He would run into Kawhi and have no answer. So I agree with you there that it did not work.
And I think his problem is that on most defenders, even really against two, I'd say average defenders, he can beat those guys most of the time. I mean, he just is that quick, yeah. Elusive. He's got the move, his dribble, his hesitation moves are just that good. We're like, you know, in Brooklyn where they put, I forget who they had guarding him, but it was two below average or average defenders guarding him, and he was beating them constantly.
That's Alan Crabb. Yeah.
Alan Crabb. And was it I'm not going to pronounce the guy's name right.
I'm sorry, it wasn't Alan Crabb. I can't remember who it was.
No, it was, wasn't it?
Joe Harris. That's who it was. Thank you.
But wasn't
it, I thought of three shooters. Kurucs had him a little bit at the end, yeah.
Yeah, where they were kind of doubled. They were playing zone, so that was also weird. But like, he had to recognize with the Raptors, Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard are elite-level defenders. And so at that point, if they're both guarding you, get rid of the ball and either try to get the ball off some action again or just, you know, draw them all in and find somebody wide open. I mean, you're better off taking the open shot than Oladipo trying to force up a long two with two of the best defenders in the league on him at one point. Like, it just, I think he's got to realize that in the moment. Cause I think, you know, if you think about it in the grand scheme of things, you know, 25 to 30 teams, he can beat most of their best defenders, but against this team, against the Raptors, he couldn't because those guys were that good defenders.
I'd rather have Thad ISO like Siakam than have Vic go one on two against Kawhi and Danny Green by a mile. Like, there had to be some other deferral there.
Well, and he was kind of doing, I mean, the Raptors did kind of the opposite where I think Kawhi would go in and draw all the defenders in and then he'd kick it out and they'd have all these open guys for threes. Like, that's what the Raptors were doing. They just need to do the same thing. And, you know, you make your 3 points, you don't make a 3 point shot.
They missed a lot of threes until the fourth that game too. They had like it looked like the Pacers played better defense than they did because the Raptors missed a lot of open threes.
Yeah. And also they had a couple, they had that really bad long rebound that Thad missed because he was trying to take it like that. And that killed them. They get that rebound, they probably win the game actually.
The 8 second call that was actually like maybe 8.00 seconds. It was so close.
Yeah. It was the first time in really this year I remember back to back games where Oladipo was just really sloppy in the games. I mean, his free throws were inexcusable against the Cavs. I mean, he makes just one of those. They probably go to overtime, win that game. That was inexcusable. And I guess where I would correlate to is that Atlanta Maverick stretch last season. That was kind of reminded me of that kind of stretch where they were just like nothing was going right for them in any moments. They were like playing two teams who were pretty bad. Raptors are pretty good, but like nothing was going right.
Right, exactly. But then early the whole half of the Wizards game, 6 assists, 2 rebounds, and 2 steals for Vic before he even took his first shot, which I feel like that's almost too extreme on the other end.
Yeah, I mean, you had the Wizards game where the Wizards were literally completely, utterly gassed.
Oh my gosh, the second half they just had nothing.
Right. Well, Wall had the flu or some kind of sickness on Saturday night, so he didn't play. So he was still sick, and then half the team had played like 40 more minutes.
Yeah, Beal played like 50, didn't he? Yeah,
Beal played 54, and Ariza played 54.
Yeah, Beal was 2 of 11 too. Like, they had nothing going on of it, and all those guys. I felt bad almost.
But I mean, the Wizards game is a perfect example of everybody else in the team is playing really well as of late, and so you can defer because you look good deferring because, you know, Turner goes 8 of 7, right. Thad goes 5 of 12. Like,
Turner grabs a million misses because the Wizards can't make anything.
Yeah, Sabonis goes 6 of 7. Like, he had 9 assists because guys are hitting shots. I think the assist number is only higher now because the guys are making the shots he set them up for.
And he's passing a little more. I'd like to look into that, but I would think from watching he's passing more.
Well, he's definitely taking a little bit less shots at times. Right. I mean, he was at like 18 or 19 coming in before the injury. Now he's more like, I would say, at 15 or 16 over the last 4 or 5 games that he's played. But he can do that because guys
are
shooting better, so he feels more comfortable giving up the ball. You know, he's taking 14.4 over the last, what is it, he's played now 7 games. And you go before then, I think he was at 18. I'm going to look through real fast, but it looks like he was at 17.9 per game. So
very nice.
I mean, he's down three shots.
Right, yeah, 3.5 right there. Dang.
Which, yeah, I would say this is what we've kind of been harping on this podcast, was where does like a guy like Turner get his shot increase from?
Here they are. And it's
been Oladipo, but Turner has to make his shots, and Turner's been making his shots for now about a month. So it's working out, I guess.
And I like that he's trying that. You know, Vic's not like – Ben Gibbs heard about it. Like, Vic is at his, except at the end of games, like during the course of the first 3.8 quarters, Vic is at his worst when he's just a battering ram. But when he's like distributing and being a part of the Pacers and stuff. He's very good, and that's what he was in the key moments of the better part of, what we say, 11 quarters out of 12.
Yeah, and he, the thing is, he's so good that he even can play that battering ram style and win games at times.
Right.
That's the
it's
one.
It's not benefit. Bad. It's worse.
Yeah, it's not as efficient, and it's not as team oriented. It doesn't mm-hmm. get other, you know, it leaves other guys out there kind of hanging. But with Turner too, the thing I've kind of liked a lot too is he, when he gets the ball, he seems more ready to shoot than he's ever looked.
Yeah.
Where he actually, like, he'll get the ball at like the free throw line and fake the pass, but no, he's faking the pass and shoot instead of, you know, not being decisive. He feels confident right now.
That's what I was going to say, is like, what always makes Sabonis so good to me is like the second Sabonis catches the ball, he knows exactly what he's going to do next. And that has now bled into Turner, and he looks so much better doing that. His passing has looked good. Zach Lowe talked about it, but I mean, remember that pass he had to Boyan on the corner in the Suns game? Like, he's doing three or four of those every game. And like you said, his confident shots actually going in. 7 offensive rebounds against the Wizards was crazy. Like, something clicked somewhere. I don't know exactly what it is, but I think it's a combination of decisiveness and confidence just all rising up at the same time.
Yeah. So what do you think came first? His ability to, like, his confidence scoring or his confident passing?
Oh my gosh. Easily scoring. He still isn't necessarily a confident passer. Remember when Caitlin said that? Like, in summer league, he literally had no assists.
Yeah. But I what I mean by that is, like you said, at some point he became decisive, and I wonder if because he was shooting the ball well that he became a more decisive player, or he became a more decisive player, making him a better shooter, I guess, is the way
That's a good point. Like he realizes when he decides right away to pass that things go well, that now he's like,
and he realized that he can pretty much, when he's being guarded by these centers, he can pretty much get his shot up at any spot on the floor. And the question is whether, you know, he's just got to have the right touch. But, like, I mean, you know, I was annoyed at his 20-foot mid-range shots, but those little 12, 10-footers are not terrible. I mean, they're more efficient.
No, that's what you want. That, again, back to Zach Lowe, because I just listened to that yesterday. But he said, if you're going to pop the 15 or pop the 24, no in between. And it seems like he's doing that more too.
Yeah, he seems to have a better understanding of where he needs to be on the court at times. Mm-hmm. Like, where the spots exact being. Like, before, it felt like he was kind of just out there running around with his, like, I wouldn't say like a chicken with their head cut off, but like, he was just ending up in spots. Now it's like he's going to specific points on the court where he wants to have the ball and make plays.
Yep. And maybe it's all the ponytail, Adam. We can't rule that out.
I mean, honestly, we can't. He maybe wasn't able to see before. I mean, it's one of his crazy.
I really want someone to ask him that. I have the chance, and I haven't done it yet. I need to.
I mean, to be honest, if he couldn't see before, he should have just shaved off. You know, just gone. I think, right? Didn't he even his rookie
Elfrid year? Payne. I mean, we've talked about this before, but like, this has happened in the NBA.
Right, his rookie year, he didn't have the dreads, did he?
Nope.
Right, So maybe
it was like a flat top kind of thing. Yeah.
When did he get the dreads? Was it his second season or his third season?
I don't know.
Because his second season was pretty good. Maybe that's why. Maybe he should go back to no dread Miles.
Miles Turner team picture 2016-17.
I think he had his dreads by
this could be a big theory, Adam.
But they were a lot smaller. They weren't as like
No, he had the headband dreads that year, remember, where they were kind of like sticking up.
Yeah, so maybe this has been his struggle for 3 seasons or 2 seasons now.
We're figuring it out right here. Big theory.
I mean, I don't know. Whatever he's doing now is working, and I guess
it is.
I think I said this on the yesterday's podcast. At some point, if this continues for like 2 or 3 months, he's going to push himself into the conversation of, this guy is like maybe an all-star borderline.
Oh, he's been like defensive player of the month over December.
Yeah, I mean, you combine – if he can score 18 points with 12 rebounds – not 17 is ridiculous, but like 12 rebounds combined with his defense.
If he can get 15 and 8 with his defense, he's good.
Yeah, but I'm saying like 18 and 10 with his defense, making like an elite-level player almost, right?
Oh, all-star-level player, yeah. And like, I mean, the last all-star spot in the East is like Siakam right now. Like, it's a pretty wide-open spot.
Well, right, in the East, center-wise, it's Porzingis when he comes back.
Drummond, Porzingis, and
– Embiid.
Embiid, yeah.
There was somebody else I had on a list, but I'm trying to remember who it was now. I think it's – but, like, I mean, defensively, he's so much better than –
Al Horford, there it is.
Oh, Al Horford was the other one. That's right.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, he's better than all those guys but Embiid. And he might even be better than Embiid right now.
Defensively, he can do more than Embiid.
Around the rim, for sure. I think Embiid's better at the perimeter, but
– I don't know. I mean, Turner's perimeter has been really solid as of late, too.
Yeah, I wish he'd get more opportunities there. But Sabonis usually takes that role when they share the
floor. And are we sure Embiid's a great perimeter defender? Oladipo seems to always cook him when he's
just quicker. So I think it's an anecdote. Maybe it's weak for me, but
Yeah. I thought Turner has been great as late on this. Like, he can be out there and is not a liability.
This whole month, he's been amazing. I think he's first now in defensive player impact plus minus, like the whole league.
I say his defense all season has been amazing. We should clarify that. It's the offensive part is finally coming along.
Yes, I agree. You want to take a pause and talk about something bad?
Sure.
So, Tyreek Evans played in two games this week, and the Pacers lost both of them. And Tyreek Evans didn't play in two games this week, and the Pacers won both of them. Tyreek Evans. Oh, I'm sorry. He did play against Toronto. I just said a lie. No, I said it right. Okay, no,
you said it right, Tony.
I said it right. I've just psyched myself out looking at the game log. Tyreek Evans has been bad. Like, I can't sugarcoat it anymore. Like, I still want to believe that he'll fit in because I don't think he's a bad NBA player, but something is wrong, and it is not good. And I think his diet is bad. Someone I got crap, I should know this. On someone on Twitter is telling me to check out his Instagram for his diet, and I didn't. It's not good. I should really know this, but I can't remember. It's bad, and he looks slow, and he can't finish at the rim, and he doesn't fit in the offense. And I don't know what to say anymore. It's just nothing is working.
Yeah, I think it's time to let Aaron Holiday play his minutes.
I am almost there. I think Tyreek has been slightly better, but Holiday was really good this weekend though.
Even if he's slightly better, the
development is worth it. I know.
Yeah, I'd be okay if the team sacrificed two or three wins just to get Holiday development in there, because Holiday clearly has the potential to be the starting point guard of the future of this team.
For sure.
The way he's so. You want to accelerate that the fast you can, because that's their next step per se. Plus, there's nothing more valuable than a
rookie deal starter.
Exactly, a guy on a rookie deal can start, because that basically means you can add another player or add a max value player, kind of on the opposite end of it, having to pay two guys. Like, they're right now, the point guard and small forward spot is $20 million between Bojan and Collison. Well, with Holiday in there instead of Collison, you have $18 million to spend on your small forward spot.
Mr. Tell the Truth, the guy telling me to look at Tyreek's Instagram. But yes, it I agree. I think when I wrote about it, I was trying to like draw the line pretty softly, because it's gonna move a lot if Holiday continues to be this good. And like, he has, you know, like I said he has no expectations, right? So even if he is like below average, but he does good stuff, it'll look better than Tyreek Evans. We were like, yes, this is the perfect fit, and he's terrible. But now we're getting to the point where like, all these impact stats are like, these guys are not that different in impact.
No, they're not. And frankly, Tyreek Evans probably should just be traded from this team or something like that. You know what I mean? Right. He should probably be just out the door, like somewhere where he's not lingering over the team.
I don't know that he has any value at this point, unfortunately.
I mean, I guess his value is the expiring contract, right?
I was going to say, you got to either really believe that a team wants his expiring, but then the Pacers have to take back money. Or you got to believe that a team thinks that they can like just cheapen their team on a 1-year deal. Maybe that's
right. And you just buy him out or release him, I guess. What do you do? I guess, or do you just let him be on your bench and hope he doesn't destroy your locker room?
Yeah, he's not a bad depth piece, right? He's better than rotation level, but he's better than replacement level, but he doesn't fit. So it's hard. It's a tough spot. It is a really tough spot. I want to look. Here it is. There it is. So since he started, he is shooting under 30% from three. He's shooting 32.4% from the field, under 30% from three, and has just been awful. 9.2 points per game, 3.2 rebounds, 2.5 assists for a guy playing over 20 minutes a game. That is his stats since he started for the first time with Vic out.
Yeah, and you would think his 9 or 10 shot, I guess 10 shots per game would be better off use, because Holiday's not going to get to 10 shots, but if you get a couple of them to Sabonis, a couple more to Corey Joseph, it would all just be better.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And Holiday like was really good against the Wizards.
Yeah, he was. And Holiday also is just, you can see the signs of like, this guy's going to be an NBA player.
His offense is very good.
His offense is very good. And he makes some plays defensively. He's not a fantastic defender, but he makes the still behind negative, back.
But block. not really, really bad like I thought.
No, and for a bench point guard and a rookie, the negative is expected, I guess.
Yeah.
Yes. So
no, it's absolutely.
It's time to get him minutes. Like, it just seems like it's useless to play Tyreek to win two more games than to get Holiday and really kind of keep accelerating your team's timeline forward by playing Holiday more minutes.
Yes, I agree with that. It's a shame because I thought Tyreek was a pretty good fit, but he is not. He's not because
I think we underestimated the approach the team takes in practices and in the kind of the system they actually run. Like we thought it wasn't really a system, but it really is more of a system than we think.
We thought it was a system. Other people did not think it was a system.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that you don't realize on the outside how hard McMillan works his players. Yes. And how hard they practice so that, yeah, they might not run specific plays all the time, but it's so that when they're in chaos situations, they know what they're doing and they can kind of thrive. Because you can see that a lot where they like can constantly be changing the pace at every moment. And it's McMillan calling out in the sideline a little bit, but also it's just the players knowing when to pick their spot and stuff like that. And Evans, I don't think has played for a coach of McMillan's style. I don't think a lot of guys have in the league. He's kind of more of an old school coach still. I don't know how hard practices are compared to where they used to be when he was a Portland coach, but he's just a different style coach than any other coach I'm sure Evans has played for. And so you kind of have to buy in. If you don't buy in, you're kind of on the outside.
It's not working. He's currently shooting 21% worse from 2-point range than Aaron Holiday. 21%. That is crazy. Wow.
I'm in love with the way Holiday's been playing recently. I'm super.
How can you not be? Like he's especially like maybe I'm wrong in saying this, but like for me, it's like okay, with every rookie, there's just no expectations, right? Just let him do their thing, and he just does good things. You know, like maybe I need expectations for this dude.
Well, it's different because one, you have the tea leaf effect of just like somebody who literally gets on the court and can't do anything. And two, you're right to have no expectations, but then when he comes on the court and actually like you feel like he's an NBA player, you don't worry about, oh, we have Holiday out there, we're going to get beat, we're going to lose points, whatever it is. It's like, you know, with Leaf was, it's like Holiday on the court, it's like, oh, let's see what he can do. Oh, wow, he made a nice play, got to the rim, got fouled and hit the layup, or he hit a nice three or whatever it is. Like he's an NBA player. I don't know. You could tell he's an NBA player. And now the question is, what's his ceiling going to be? Is he going to be a starting point guard? Is he going to be a rotation point guard? But it's a great pick at 22. I mean, it's
23, even 23. Better.
Getting a rotation player at 23 is solid.
Home run. Yeah. Hey, did you just slander TJ Leaf? Because I believe Nate McMillan called a timeout to get him on the floor this weekend.
Do you want to complain about his?
Yeah, we can do a blurb on that.
6 minutes more than
you
needed to.
Didn't you just do it on the show?
Yeah, the only thing I have to say is you could tell the starters wanted out at 4 minutes left when Vic took a 26-foot three-point shot.
Vic starts limping. All of a sudden, it's like, dude, what are you doing?
Well, no, he took a three-point shot. Was like, ugh, I'm exhausted. Why am I still in this game? And then he played 2 more minutes, which seems stupid.
So stupid. He does this so often. We always talk about it.
But he's not going to fix it until somebody gets hurt.
I know. It's infuriating. It is infuriating. I don't know what to say about it. It's just bad. Do we want to do game previews? Should we move on?
Well, do you want to, on a positive note, anything positive from the week? I mean,
Thad Young, go ahead.
Yeah, I thought Thad Young's been playing great for now 10 straight games, give or take. I think his Washington game wasn't great. It wasn't like it was his previous 9 games.
I mean, 10-9 is fine for him.
Yeah, but I mean, he was like at 17-8 for a while. That's what I mean.
He was player of the week for a reason. He was incredible that week.
I mean, well, I think he had a 2-week stretch where he's like that. But literally, Thad Young. If you could have like imagined who you were trading for when you traded the Caris LeVert pick for him, that this last 2 weeks was the Thad Young that the Pacers thought they were getting.
Yeah, he's been super good. It's funny because someone this whole stretch of them being really good, whatever you said they are this month plus the end of November when they were really good, it's like someone is playing really well for like random stretches of time.
Well, and you have the combination now of like really Bojan, Turner, and Thad Young all playing really good at the same time, which maybe they go together with Vic not being there. But I mean, so I was just looking at this last 10 games. So you look at it, last 10 games. So it started in Orlando on the 7th. Thad Young's stats are, I'm going to read them. They're going to be 16.4 points, 7.9 rebounds, 2.7 assists on a 53-35-73 shooting split.
And defending lights out.
Yeah. I mean, he's just a really, really good player, and he's been a really good player for 10 games now. And the question is, will this continue? Will this be a minor blimp in an overall? Because having a down year, his first 24 games was a down season for sure. You could see it. Or
down year scoring, yes.
Well, yeah, an offensively just terrible, almost terrible year, I would say. Like 16% from three. I kind of compare it to like when he gets the ball and starts going towards the rim like a bowling ball that couldn't stop. And then his hook shot ends up, or his floater ends up 2 feet or like on the front of the rim half the time. Like that's what it felt like. And then all of a sudden now it's, he's going towards the rim and his floater's banking in, or he's he's done a really good job tipping in balls, like timing it right and getting his arms past the center and putting these weird tip in shots. Like, I don't know whether all this is luck right now or he's finally meshing with the team right or whatever it is, but I don't know. Cause if he keeps playing like this for another month, he's going to be hard to not resign. You know, I think we're heading to a point where it's like, okay, we can probably live with or without him at the end of the season. To now it's like, well, if he's playing this good, you can't live without him.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of guys I want to bring back, which is bad.
Well, I think we both can agree Darren Collison probably isn't coming back.
Agreed. He is like, you know, what's funny is like, he's just been steadily below average, but Tyreek being so bad and everyone else being so good means just, he's just a non-story.
Yeah, no, that's true. And he's, when he's bad, it's not because he's not like going to pop on the stat sheet bad because he's not going to like take 15 shots and make two of them.
Right.
When he's just not shooting well, he just doesn't shoot. He
doesn't
just,
shoot.
He is still a really good role
player. Actually a good thing though, right? Yeah.
No, he's a good role player where like he still kind of gets the offense going, control. Like yeah. you need him to spell Oladipo, and at times when Oladipo brings the ball up too much, like he's fine. He's just not worth his $10 million right now.
It's him and Tyreek are the cap space for the next summer.
Like if Collison made $5 million, and you're back at point guard, I think you'd be happy with him.
Yep.
Right? If he was. So, I mean, and I guess the question also this offseason is, can you get Thad for less than 13? And what is Bo Young going to get on the open market? Is it going to be more than he's making now?
Yes.
And that's where you get cap space. Then you have some cap space left.
Yep, I agree.
But some of being eaten up by Turner's contract too. Remember that.
I know. I agree. But so. The cap goes up $7 million too.
So that makes up some of the difference in Turner's contract, right? Because Turner's making $11 million more or $12 million more than last season.
No, he's at like $4 million now.
I thought he's at like 5 or 6 now.
Yeah.
He's gonna be at 18, so.
So close enough. But let's preview some games. Let's talk.
We'll do salary cap stuff later. We are past
trade deadline area. Yeah.
We are past the December 15 trade deadline, so anybody can be traded now.
Yes. All right. Let's take one more break and then do some games. So me and Adam are recording on Christmas Eve. So sorry if any stats changes or anything. I don't know if any team of these two teams play in the next 2 days. But tonight, when you're listening to this, the Pacers play the Atlanta Hawks, who stink. The Hawks stink, and the Hawks have won 3 in a row. So maybe I am wrong to say that the Hawks stink. But the Hawks are 9-23. They are 29th in offense, 24th in defense, and first in pace, flying up and down the court, thanks to having a million spry young dudes. But the Pacers already beat the Hawks 97-89, so I think my expectations are about that.
They should smoke the Hawks.
They should smoke the Hawks.
Let's be honest. I mean, the Hawks are that. What's the record now? I'm trying to
9-23.
So what is that? But in terms of the NBA, does that make them the worst team in the league? Second worst team?
Third, fourth? In the entire league, they are 28th best expected win loss.
So they're half a game ahead of the Bulls, Knicks, and Cavs. And they're
actually the Suns are winning a few games right now too.
They're probably a game ahead of the Suns, so they're one of the worst 5 teams in the league, and they could end up with their 1 pick probably. Their team is probably going to be Zion Williamson and Trae Young eventually.
Zion, Trae Young, John Collins is the 2026 NBA champions.
Maybe, but they beat this team without Vic, right? So they should be able to beat him with him.
They did. Well, that was the game he went down, but yeah, without
Vic, he played 5 minutes, so he basically didn't play.
Without Vic. John Collins currently nursing an ankle injury. His first game of the season was against the Pacers. And former Pacer Miles Plumlee is also dealing with a knee injury. They have quite a few injuries. Torian Prince won't play. Amari Spellman won't play. They're pretty much just the Trae Young show at this point with some other steady hands. Kevin Herter's been on fire from three recently. But, they are not very good.
Yeah, I'd say the only butcher I really see is maybe Trae Young has a nice game.
Trae Young goes off shooting the ball. He's such a good passer. But other than that, like imagine he's getting 7.2 assists with like a terrible roster surrounding him. You know, he could be getting quite a few.
I think this would be a nice game to see a lot of Aaron Holiday minutes.
It will. What is Tyreek's injury going to look like? Is he going to stay out for a bit?
It's a knee injury, so who knows?
It's true.
Maybe they let him stay out a little longer than he needs to stay out.
He's out indefinitely now, right? That's the Pacers buzzword.
Yeah, I don't know. They should leave him out as much as they can, to be honest.
Tyreek in a second for Jeremy Lin. There you go. Fixed it.
Is that – what's Jeremy Lin making, 12?
Yeah.
It's 1 or 2 years left.
He's on his last year.
That would be worth it, probably.
It'd be fun. I just looked at Jeremy Lin's name on the Hawks thing. I was like, oh, yeah, maybe.
That maybe could work. I don't know. Does that really do anything?
Jeremy Lin's the best player on this team. That's all you need to know about how good the Hawks are.
Yeah, but the Pacers have so many guards.
Yeah, but, I mean, he and Kojo could play together, right?
Yeah, you're better off dumping Collison, though.
That's all you care about to me.
You're better off dumping Collison for Jeremy Lin than
maybe
Tyreek, because that way you get rid of the guy that he would take minutes from.
Yeah, that doesn't make as much sense for the Hawks, though, which is less fun.
That's also true, I guess.
Like we saw last time, you know, they just don't have guys who can really get going scoring. I know recently they've won three in a row, but it's the Wizards, Knicks, and Pistons who we're about to talk about, so not like super impressive victories. And yeah, Kent Bazemore's pretty good too, but he is more of a play finisher than an initiator. So it's pretty much if Trae Young finds a way to do stuff, they can have an okay offense, but they're 28th, 9th for a reason. The Pacers defense is second for a reason. This should be easy.
Man, the Wizards are really bad. Holy crap. When are they blowing that team up?
The Wizards are really bad, and they just traded a young player for Trevor Ariza. Like, what the hell is going on, man?
Yeah, Kelly Oubre. Low key would be a nice little acquisition for the Pacers.
That was the worst trade ever.
That was terrible.
So bad.
But something's going to flip Oubre eventually, I think, at the trade.
I bet you're right. Okay. That could be their path to a point guard.
Again, I digress because the Hawks are so bad. I don't really want to talk about them.
I don't either. Alex Poitras, former Pacer, kind of thriving in Atlanta, though. Good for him.
Yeah, so X-Factor, Pacers, every player could have a good game if they wanted to.
Is the first game after Christmas ever weird? I don't think so, but it just could be.
Last year, Vic didn't play in it, so I couldn't tell
they
you.
They lost. Didn't they play the Hawks in Atlanta? Is that right?
No, that did not
play the Hawks. They put the Mavs. That's who it was.
That's right. That was this game where Lance drove the ball with his foot.
Yeah.
30 seconds left.
Anyone except for Bojan, because Bazemore is a good their best defender.
I can't wait for Bojan to have 35 points. No, it's true.
Any big man, because John Collins isn't playing, so their best rebounder is now Alex Len. Just lots of easy opportunities to do counting stat stuff. I don't anticipate.
Yeah, I'm really hoping I can turn off the game after about the second, maybe mid third quarter. I can like kind of, or maybe not turn it off, but just put it in the background and do something else.
Do something else. Yeah. I will probably watch this one just because I was only spottily able to watch the weekend's games. I need to get back into the swing of Pacers basketball.
Yeah. See, I watched both weekend's games fully. Yeah. Actually, I spent a lot of Saturday watching that Wizards game against the Suns. Like I watched a lot of basketball this weekend for some reason.
I watched some college basketball, unfortunately, this weekend. Ugh.
See, I consume more NBA, like, actual live games. Usually I consume it, like, afterwards. I see two mega quarters. I watch the fourth quarter on one of those sites again. Uh-huh. Find it, but now, this week, I caught it all live. It was crazy.
That is good. That's all you need.
It's more fun live. Catch it live.
I ain't having to watch football or college basketball when the Pacers are on, but my family is who they are.
Yeah, you can't. That's why I'm growing up my family. Next week it'll be different. Next week will be a lot different. We'll be able to watch as much basketball for sure.
But next week's also going to be the Lockdown Tony podcast for the week. So.
It is. Well, now you spoiled it.
We'll talk about that later in the week.
Pacers win this game, right? Easily. Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, we're not fitting a Cavs kind of miracle win.
They beat the Pacers at home without Vic in a game where Aaron Holiday hadn't like really figured out how to play with other dudes yet. I think they're going to win.
All right, I think that's fair. I don't have anything else in this game. You want to just move on to the next game? Because
Yes, a team they haven't played, so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and it's a decent team.
A decent team, a division team that stomped them three times last year. And it's the first time they played Blake Griffin since, like, 2016.
Yeah, lots of – and the best part, no Tobias Harris.
No Tobias Harris, who scores 150 points against the Pacers every season. The Pistons, the Detroit Pistons, and Zaza Pachulia, who's coming out to injure people, which scares me. The Detroit Pistons are 15 and 16. They are slumping hardcore after being pretty good up to December. They have 9 losses this month, so not good. They are 14th in pace, 11th in defense, 25th in offense. That's horrible. But their defense is okay. They have good rebounders. So they don't give up any second chance points or anything like that. But they do not have anyone besides Blake Griffin who can score the ball.
Yeah, you didn't do the numbers, right? They're 11th in defensive rating and 25th. Oh, you did?
I did. I said a lot really fast right there.
Yeah, I might have missed. I was looking at their stat sheet trying to figure out how many points going to per game. And was more amazed by anything that Blake Griffin's averaging 25 points a game on 36% shooting from three.
Blake Griffin quietly very good this year.
He's an all-star, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. Wow. He's having a really good year.
He is. He's a really good basketball player. Detroit is a really untalked about team because the two big man strategy is really unsexy, but they're like Blake's really good.
They have a lot of weird pieces. Like nothing they do. Doesn't fit as well as it should.
They
like,
had not Reggie Jackson at point guard, I think they'd be a lot better.
Yeah, he's the part that makes you think, oh, right, he was good like maybe 4 years ago as a third stringer or as the backup on the Thunder. He hasn't been good really since.
He's shooting slightly better than Tyreek Evans and playing like 10 more minutes a game.
I mean, you know it's bad when your three-point percentage matches your shooting percentage when you're not taking all your shots from three. That's like a telltale sign of a bad NBA player.
Yes, it is. Blake is the butcher for both of us, I'm guessing, and he's like the focus.
You know, Drummond could be just because he could just destroy the glass on Turner.
16 rebounds a game, Adam. That is insane.
Are they? Is both Drummond and Griffin all-stars at this point?
No way a team that's losing record gets two, right?
That's a lot of stats.
That is a lot of stats, and that's what voters see.
Well, not the bench. The bench guys are voted for by the coaches or somebody.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, that's true. I bet Drummond doesn't get it, and Pistons fans will get pissed.
Because, the Pacers right now are 2.5 games out of the one seed. If they're the one seed at the All-Star break, do they get more than one All-Star still? Because I'm not sure they do.
I don't know. The Pistons are like the opposite of the Pacers, right? They have two pretty good players, and then everyone else is like average to below average, where the Pacers have a bunch of above average dudes.
Yeah, I would say Pacers have one really good, really superstar, and then, I don't know, 4 to 6 above average players.
Oh, probably like 7. Everyone in the rotation but Tyreek. Oh, Darren Collison this year. Never mind.
I was going to say DC, and I don't know where you would put McDermott. That's the question.
I take that. Oh, the Pistons would kill for Doug McDermott.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're talking about the guy that they're playing Glenn Robinson.
He's been awful. He's been awful for them.
Great replacement by the Pacers to bring in Doug McDermott over that.
So, yeah, there it is. The Pistons are 29th in three-point percentage this year. They just can't make them. They don't have any good shooters. And really, I mean, Reggie Jackson's an okay shot creator, but pretty overrated in that way. Like, their most assists per game comes from Blake. Like, they do not have good setup men.
No, they don't. Do you remember when Glenn Robinson, replaced Paul George for 5 games and played incredible?
No, then he replaced Monte, and Monte was all pissed, and GR3 was doing good.
And he was like, we thought he was going to be like the Pacers, maybe a future small forward, everything. And now, I mean, I get he got hurt, that threw him off, but man,
people were telling me he was going to start over Bojan. Good times. Good times.
Oh, I mean, the Bojan we're seeing right now, you couldn't even predict that kind of Bojan.
No, I could not.
He's playing, I mean, Bojan did something to his body or whatever he's been doing. I mean, hopefully it's not steroids. That's the purpose of that. Yeah, whatever he's been working out and whatever it is, he's like in a completely different shape and size than he's ever been in his career until he came to Indiana.
Yeah, GR3 is getting out this game, though. He's been hurt. And Ish Smith will be out too. He's hurt. Henry Ellenson, who stinks anyway, won't play. So Jose Calderon is their backup point guard. Corey Joseph's going to run like 1,000 circles around that dude because he just runs forever. They play Bruce Brown, a second round pick, like decently heavy minutes. Their bench is just not very good. So I think the bench will be a good opportunity to get some easy stuff going. I know they have the two good centers, but when Zaza is in, I like Sabonis' chances of having a good game. And
so
Luke Kennard guarding whoever will be fun.
Is there any player outside Griffin or Drummond who play rotation minutes for the Pacers on this roster?
Reggie Bullock. I like Reggie Bullock.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. He was kind of the one.
Good shooter defender, but that's the only one.
Wouldn't probably. He's
Jackson would not. Oh, Luke Kennard might.
Well, I don't know. Is Luke Kennard better than?
But just because of his age.
Is he better than McDermott? Probably not.
Well, he's a two guard.
Yeah, but they're playing. I get he's a two guard, but they're the same kind of.
I'd rather play a young, promising shooter than Tyreek.
Yeah, no, but I mean, Kennard would be playing in the same spot that McDermott is playing in.
I see. Yeah, maybe.
Probably. I mean, I don't want to conflate two guys that are white 3-point shooters, but they're kind of similar style players.
No. Kennard can dribble and stuff. He's a guard.
I don't know. Is he that creative a guard? I guess he can put the ball on the floor a little more.
Yeah. I kind of like Luke Kennard. Something about me likes Luke Kennard. I don't know what it is.
Well, that's because you like Duke, I think, for some reason.
I do not like Duke at all. They're one of my least favorite teams.
Well, I saw Kennard play in college, and I hated him then, and I really don't like him now.
I don't know why I like Luke Kennard. I don't like Stanley Johnson. He's not a good player. He's an okay defender, though. So, yeah, just a lot of holes in this Pistons team, and their offense is not very good. Get stops, get in transitions, score some points, go win the game.
Yeah, I said
they couldn't beat the Pistons last year for some reason, though. So maybe I'm getting too hasty.
Well, they were getting destroyed down low, if I remember right. Drummond was killing them night after night. It was Drummond, and then it was Tobias Harris.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say Tobias Harris. Yeah.
So,
and they had Avery Bradley back then, who was this year.
Only sucked. I don't think he played though in that game. I thought he was hurt for all.
He played in three of them, three of the four.
I think he was traded by the four. No,
he missed the one. No, he wasn't. He missed the one we were at though.
Yes.
Where Lance went crazy.
No, that was a Raptors game.
That was a Raptors game. I'm sorry. Lance went crazy in a different Pistons game.
Yeah, that when he brought him back with like in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
Good times, man. Those are good
times.
But I guess I forget where we were going with this, but I think the thing with Detroit is it could be a future first round match if the Bears get a top two or three seed.
Yeah, I don't know if they'll make the playoffs, man. They're just bad.
Yeah, but the East is not that good.
That's true. That's five. They're one of the best eight teams in the East. That's true.
I mean, there are five good teams in the East, and the rest are clustered from 6 to 10. Or
Miami, Charlotte, them.
Brooklyn, Orlando. Brooklyn,
yeah.
In Washington,
if those are the teams you're fighting with, though, like, what are you really doing?
I mean, you're trying to make the playoffs for the first time in two seasons, the second time in like 10 years.
If those are the teams you're fighting with and you have Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, something's wrong with the rest of your roster.
Yeah, but that's every one of those teams is, well, I guess Orlando and the Nets was
that. Orlando and the Nets are in a, totally different thing.
But Charlotte's in a situation where they got Kemba. You have a guy who's going to be an all-star probably, and you're barely hanging around. And then you got Miami, who's, I don't know, a cluster of who knows what.
If you had 15 average players, what would happen? You'd have the Miami Heat.
You'd have a 16-16 record on the dot with – this is crazy. They're 16-16 with a 106.5 points per game and 106.3 allowed per game. So a point – literally, they're the most average team in the league.
Average.
They're
so
almost
average.
Fortunately, they're 7-9 at home and 9-7 on the road, and not 8-8. That would be the best.
Yeah. They have like some above average players, and they balance it out by playing some lower average players.
Yeah, what's crazy though? They're 9-4 against the West. Wonder if they played Phoenix.
That's the most Spoelstra thing ever. Did you listen to the Zach Lowe, Chris Herring, didn't you?
I have not yet. I have it teed up to listen to tonight.
Yeah, they talked about Eric Spoelstra and Zach Lowe said, I think Spoelstra would rather play with like
six. Oh, you know what? No, I did hear the Chris Herring one. That's right.
Yeah, where they'd rather have like six injuries a game and he has to like find a mismatch roster to win the game.
Right, because he compared him to Pop in that same way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he likes the challenge. Speaking of Pop, Spurs quietly good again. See, this always happens with Pistons conversations. I stray away from the Pistons. There's nothing fun about this Pistons team besides Blake to me. And when I have to talk about other Blake stuff, I just don't know what else to say besides Drummond can rebound and no one else can shoot.
Yeah, I mean, this Pistons team they're honestly just frustrating to watch because they somehow will have a lead. They'll have a 10-point lead at some point, I'm sure, because that's how the Pacers roll. And we'll try to figure out how they have a 10-point lead.
Yeah, when they have a lineup in there with Blake out or Blake and Drummond out, when it's like Langston Galloway and Bruce Brown, Luke Kennard, and who the heck even knows.
You know what? I'll be shocked when the Pacers are down 25-10 in the first quarter at some point. But then they'll come back and win. But like that's the way the Pacers rolled the whole season, I felt like.
Ooh, and debut of the earned jerseys in this game. Wow. Ooh,
wow. Oh, yeah. I totally know what those are.
It's the White City jerseys.
Oh, okay. Can we say though that the Motorola patch is not a curse now? Can we?
Ben wrote that. That was really funny.
Well, I thought it was funny how I didn't know they were putting it on until I saw it. I'm like, oh, they lost. Oh.
Yeah. Ben Gibson wrote a piece after they lost two games with the patch about how it was cursed. But
let it be known that patch ruined the jinx, the reverse jinx you, me, Caitlin, and Whitney had put on this team. It's really annoying. We did a podcast. They won 7 in a row, and then that patch ruined
that. Patch ruined it, man. We talked about their jerseys, too, and they made them worse.
They could be on an 11-game win streak right now if they didn't have that patch.
Oh, jeez. It is what it is.
Man, if they had won both those games, they'd be a game.
I mean, they couldn't get on like a 5 or 6 right now. Their schedule coming up not that hard. Because after those two games, it's Hawks again, Bulls. So, okay, only 4, because then they have the Raptors.
Well, their schedule's not hard because there were literally 4 other good teams in their conference.
That's true.
They should beat every other team in the conference almost.
Touche. Touche.
Like, that's the biggest problem. I don't know what podcast I heard this on, but they were talking about how, yeah, the Pacers are playing really good right now, but look who they beat. I mean, I don't mean to be like a Debbie Downer, but, man, the East is bad.
East is bad. They got the Bucks in there. They beat the Bucks in there.
They beat two good teams, but like the West is every night is brutal. Like if you put any of these top
teams are good. Like now every team in the West is okay except the Suns.
I mean, think about it. If you put any of the teams in the West, probably, you know, from the 4 to the 14, really, that are all kind of clustered together between
non-Lakers, Thunder, Rockets, Warriors teams.
Yeah, so from basically the Blazers down, you could probably that team would at least have a 20-win record in the East, at least. Yeah. I mean, they'd have probably between 22 and 25 wins.
It is what it is.
No, I mean, it's geography stinks. Maybe don't have more desirable West Coast cities where players want to come to play. You know, that's your fault for attracting free agents. And I guess for the league screwing the Pelicans. Remember, the Pelicans should be in the East. They were in the East until 2005.
That's true. They should.
They got screwed.
New Orleans is in the East. Put Memphis in the East while you're at it.
Well, every team that theoretically the way it should be is every team east of the Mississippi should be in the East, and every team west of Mississippi should be in the West. That's how it's supposed to go, yeah, I think.
That would be fine. I would live with
it. I mean, think about it. If the Pelicans, Grizzlies, Timberwolves were in the East, the outlook of their franchise would be so different. And it's crazy to think about it, but like the Pelicans probably wouldn't be losing Davis because they'd be in the NBA Finals this season. Grizzlies would have had like 5 more successful seasons than they've had.
The Grizzlies would have made the finals at one point when they were winning 50.
The Timberwolves might have won the East last year if they had been in the East. Like it's crazy how much geography is screwing some of these teams over, and it really makes sense for why there should be a 1-16 format. I mean, it's just that's the perfect argument of like if you put any of those three teams in another conference, they would be they finish in the top 8 every single season in terms of like they'd be one of those teams in the semifinals every year.
Lazarus Jackson, great Pistons dude. Always complains about on Dunked On how they gloss over the Pistons all the time. I hope he listens to this and goes, oh, they glossed over the Pistons.
You're going to have him on this week, right?
We'll
have
him. Yeah, he might listen before I reach out to him. But, yes, I do plan on having him
last. All right, we'll have him on before each one, hopefully. Or
yes, he's good. He's very good, and we've been on his show. I'm sure you've heard him before.
Yeah, he's funny. He's going to be so mad. You're definitely right. He's going
to
be.
I feel bad. I wanted to talk about Blake Griffin and how they're not very good, and then we talked about other stuff.
Yeah, we digressed.
I think they're going to win both games this week.
I would agree. I think they're going to be on a 4-game win streak heading into the last game of the month, which they play against
the Hawks.
And then they play the Bulls, and then they play the Raptors. That's the big game. That's the big game coming up in like 2 weeks.
In Toronto again. Yep. What are you working on?
I have a Thad Young piece that should publish Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't know, whenever I feel like getting up. I think it's ready. I don't know. I was trying to decide whether to post on Christmas Day or not. I'll decide in the next hour.
You're going to do stuff about Turner's big game. Probably 17 rebounds is cool. I just wrote a Christmas card from the Pacers, which was fun too. Other than that, I don't know. I'm going to be writing a lot because I'm taking time off from work. So
we should start the Turner for the All-Star game.
We should.
Buzz, because
voting starts. If you're listening, voting started yesterday, so go vote for players.
Because he's playing really well. Like maybe he should be an All-Star.
We hope you had a Merry Christmas.
Yes.
Or if you didn't celebrate Christmas, we were having a good holiday.
So are we posting this on the 26th? We decided.
Yes.
All right. So yeah, everybody. I hope everybody had a good Christmas. Well, probably later in the week.
Enjoyed the games, hopefully, too.
Yes. Christmas Day is a great slate of basketball.
It's a great slate of basketball. That's all. We'll be back tomorrow to talk Hawks. It'll probably be me. I'm not sure yet, though. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you soon.